Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome back into the All Things Mizzou podcast presented by Missouri Tigers on SI. Missouri taking on Oklahoma this week, and Eli Drinkwitz again giving us a lot to talk about with the things he talked about. Obviously, a lot of speculation with Eli Drinkwitz in this moment right here. And we are 10 days away from the end of Missouri's regular season. So it's a odd point, the oddest point of the season up to this point. Starting with that Mississippi State game last week, where it's like, all right, you know, this is pretty cool. Mod Hardy is awesome. I did not realize how close he was to breaking Cody Schrader's Singleton records, although it does help when you can get a 300-yard game in there. So excited to follow Mod do that these next 2 weeks. So there's definitely things to watch there. But the main thing to watch and the main point of conversation for Missouri fans right now is what is going to happen when once Missouri gets back from that flight from Fayetteville, or maybe they're driving. But we're going to talk about that today and more. Should people be worried? Should people not be worried? So excited to talk about today. Eli Drinkwitz, again, gave us some interesting material for it. So Joey Van Zummen joined, as always, by Michael Stamps here to talk about this Oklahoma game and everything else going on in the world of Mizzou football. Michael, just what are your thoughts on kind of the coaching carousel overall and where Drinkwitz fits into this?
Yeah, I think it's really important to start off by saying that for the Mizzou fans out there who thought Eli Drinkwitz was going to come out and squash every single rumor and say, I'm leaving or I'm not leaving. Like, that's just not realistic. You know, obviously I understand why the fans would want that, but it's just not going to be the case at all. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into, you know, navigating that in his position. And, you know, if these rumors are true and these teams are interested in him, I mean, I feel, and you know, he's been successful over the last two, three seasons now. It's, you know, he's well within his right to hear those out and kind of take those feelers and see what the deal is. That does not mean he's leaving. It does not mean he's 1 foot out the door already. It does not mean he hates Columbia. That's just not true at all. But it's just like a free agent in the NBA or NFL, or I guess the transfer portal now, when these guys go to different schools and feel things out. I mean, they're doing their due diligence and, you know, want to go or recruit in general. You know, they take official visits. So maybe we can view it like that now. But yeah, I mean, he's just doing his due diligence there. So I have no problem with anything he's said. And I don't know where he's been or who he's talked to. I don't really think anyone does. But he's well within his right to.
Well, if anybody at all, like,
yes,
nobody knows. Yeah,
exactly. Literally. Yeah. Nobody knows. Or maybe they do, but you know, at this point, like to Eli Drinkwitz's point, there's two games. So like, who cares about it? I know fans are, going to be, you know, riled up about it for, you know, until something happens. But, so there's that, he kind of dropped an NIL bomb on us too. Not really new information, but, to hear it from his perspective and just be, you know, completely honest about where his team stands in the NIL space was really, in all honesty, just fascinating. I don't think there are a ton of coaches out there who have provided the clarity that he kind of just gave us. So that was really interesting stuff, and it all kind of stemmed from that comment about wanting more out of Fortune 500 companies in the state of Missouri, which I don't know. I wasn't listening to the broadcast, so I don't know when that comment was made or, you know, kind of how all that process worked. But really, really interesting stuff. I think the main takeaway from, you know, those who didn't listen to every single word he said was that he doesn't hate Mizzou. He doesn't hate where he's at. But to compete now in any sort of college sport, you have to demand the absolute most of your administration. And now it's the boosters and then all the third party stuff. So him asking for more is not him saying that he thinks they're in a bad spot or that he doesn't like where he's at. But, you know, last week we talked about making the jump. He talked about it, obviously, and he mentioned it again. And to take that jump, and he said it, the next jump of the process is going to be the hardest one. The truth of the matter is you need every single dollar you can get. That's just kind of where things are at right now. And, you know, we're all aware of it. We've been aware of it for a while. He's been aware of it for a while. I just don't really think many coaches have came out and truly said what he just said. So honestly, just really fascinating to hear his perspective on it. And again, we can dive deeper into it here in a second, but really, 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 really good stuff about just kind of the general NIL space. That was some really fascinating comments and honesty he gave us there.
Right. And that conversation fits in right into the conversation of, you know, just his status at Missouri, because people took that, at least a few people took what they said on the broadcast at the end of the game, was that Drinkwitz was basically going to Missouri's athletic department and saying, look, like, I need X amount of support from not Missouri's athletics administration, but from the people who are putting money in their pockets. I, you know, some people took that as Drinkwitz saying, you know, I need X amount of support to stay here in Missouri. And we don't know if that's true. So I wouldn't run with that. And I think all of this has become just such a Rorschach test for people choosing how to interpret certain information. I think a lot of fear is playing into how people interpret that. In fact, I was pretty surprised when I logged into Twitter after the press conference and saw a lot of people being even more scared after his comments when he addressed it head on. Like you said, Michael, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to get him straight up saying, I am staying here for sure. But that doesn't mean that's not what he's thinking. But also, as some people have pointed out, even if he said that, how much does that really matter when maybe some people are just too scarred by Blake Baker doing that exact thing on Twitter and then 2 days later becoming the highest paid assistant coach in college football with LSU. I think, like you said, I understand why people want that certainty. I wouldn't expect it. Again, that doesn't mean he himself doesn't have that certainty. There's also been a lot of people, again, like I said, people choosing to interpret things to in their own way and kind of building these things together. There's been a lot of people comparing what he said on Tuesday about his status with Missouri to what he said after the Sun Belt conference championship game about other job offers. People comparing those answers. And there are similar parts of what he mentions. He talks about support, how he loves what they're building at App State. But also, it's very different when he says in that clip at App State, but also something along the lines of, like, I have a family, like, it, you know, I have to do my due diligence. And, you know, he didn't say specifically, here are these other offers out, but he at the very least mentioned other offers and that there would be benefits to them. I think that's completely different of a situation for him to be saying that. And also too, like, you got to consider what he's saying there about, you know, he has to, in terms of his family, in terms of just his long-term career, hear other offers out, is absolutely true when you're at App State. He went from making $750,000 at App State in 2019 to $4 million with Missouri in 2020. He went from a Sun Belt school to a SEC school. Not only a difference in play, but a place you can win a national championship, just at least a lot easier than a Sun Belt conference team. I just think that whole situation is completely different. You're going, and I know with this whole money conversations, and I'm interested to see the contracts on these new coaches and just the raises they're getting for guys. Like, I mean, if any of these guys that are already head coaches at top schools end up going to somewhere else, what that raise and pay looks like. Because I think, I mean, obviously the difference from Drinkwitz going that $3,250,000 back then, I mean, $3 million and $250,000 is not going to move the needle. I mean, you wouldn't think for most people. Now, again, college football, you know, I have no idea what it's like to have $9 million, but you're talking about from his jump at App State to Missouri, like you're going from being just really well off to like generational wealth. So like it's a big difference in that regard. So I've seen that. I've seen people comparing those comments. I've seen people talking about his choice of sweatshirt for his press conference. Yes, on Tuesday. The fact that there's not a Missouri logo on it. I've seen people talking about how it looks like he was reading from a script on the press conference started off. I think everybody would deal with, you know, would benefit from, again, like you said, Michael, like I absolutely get the fear. I get what's at stake here, but I think everybody would deal with, you know, benefit from not trying to go on an Easter egg hunt and try to find these little clues. So yeah. That's my thought on it.
Yeah. I think this is a deep and long conversation that could go on for a really long time. One thing that really interests me is like the blend of the resources at the school and the money he gets and where he's at. You know, Eli Drinkwitz has been able to do a lot with now what we know, they're not one of the 10 or whatever best spenders, biggest spenders in the country, which doesn't shock me. Shouldn't really shock anyone. I feel like if there were people saying that was the case, I don't really know where that was coming from. But he's been able to do, more with, I don't want to say less, but more with less, essentially. And I know there's a flip side to that argument, but if he keeps getting extended, which he's making a lot of money now. What is it, 9, right?
Correct, and a raise starting next year, I believe.
Yeah, so that happened over the summer, obviously. So he's making more money. He's up there in the upper echelon of contracts and how much money he's making now. I can't remember the exact, you know, where he ranked, but he was up there in the top 15. And clearly, it feels like Mizzou Athletics, I mean, they've been able to raise money for him. And again, it's not at the level at one of the top 10 spenders in the country, but they've shown the willingness to give him those things. So it becomes a really interesting argument when in terms of should he not, if he will stay or go, but should he's been able to do more with less. And, you know, if they keep extending him and giving him more money and giving him the resources, I mean, that's what you want. That's all you can ask from your administration. And again, I know there's the flip side to the argument, which is, you know, he should go somewhere where he's getting more resources. So I understand that, but poses some really, really interesting questions. Again, I feel like we could probably talk about this for really, really, really long time, but there's a lot of stuff that goes into this big old conversation. And I think a lot of it kind of all blends together.
Right. And well, what you said, I mean, I think even for what I said at the top of people really kind of interpreting it to what he said to the SEC network broadcast of like, I won't stay unless X, you know, X, Y, and Z sort of resources come in. Like that truly is the one thing that Missouri can't offer him. I really think, I mean, unless somebody, you know, a Penn State or LSU or Florida forks out just an incredible contract, I would imagine Missouri would be willing to match most of the contract offers that he would get. But Eli Drinkwitz also said to the SEC network broadcast in the same quote, it's not about my money. And so I would, again, I don't know what it's like to have $9 million, but that's kind of the messaging we've been getting from all of these top end coaches. Like, you know, how much does that really move the needle? The one thing that those three schools that I just mentioned have that Missouri cannot offer is that a pretty reliable pool of resources that is going to be above Missouri's. So that's the main thing there. Again, though, I think we'll find out pretty quickly after the season. Obviously, one of the top things Eli Drinkwitz, as a candidate would have going for him, if he's at all interested in that, would be that, you know, he's not going to be coaching a football team in the playoffs compared to Lane Kiffin and possibly Ryan Silverfield. So either way, like we talked about last week, though, this is going to be a really exciting offseason, you know, for Missouri fans. Could be bad, could be a really good one because of, again, what we talked about last week of the fact that even if Drinkwitz and Lane Kiffin stay put, there's going to be a whole heck of a lot of movement with coaches and then obviously huge domino effect with players after that. We'll just wrap up this conversation talking about the NIL. Like you mentioned, Michael, I do think it is interesting, like you said, of what he mentioned as far as them not being one of the top spenders. I thought it was particularly interesting in the way he addressed it of, I think there's a misconception out there that we're one of the top spenders. I don't think we are. And I think it was sort of a real call to those Fortune 500 companies to really invest in Missouri. And I would be interested to find out how that compares to some of the other SEC states. And I think, you know, you could have a whole conversation there on, like, I mean, one, the fact that Missouri, you know, has, yes, that they have, I think 11 Fortune 500 companies. There's also two major sports cities that are undoubtedly getting a lot of advertisements and whatnot from those companies. So Missouri is competing with double, if not more, of professional sports teams compared to SEC teams when it comes to that. But like you said, Michael, interesting to view what they've done in the past few years through that lens, because they have been able to get some of the top guys on the market, and we can only assume those guys haven't been cheap. And it's not like their retention rate is supremely lower than a lot of other SEC schools. So interesting. I think there's an interesting conversation. Again, you really can't assume much without having the actual numbers of, but, you know, interesting conversation as far as, like, okay, how do you approach that then if you are clearly able to recruit, at least to a certain extent, as one of the best recruiters in the SEC? So then how do you, if you don't have the same resources, do you want to go as top heavy though? Like, just because you can get those players, how do you allocate those resources? So it's definitely, like you said, Michael, interesting to know that, interesting to view what they've done through that lens, and interested to see what comes of it, if anything, over this next year, really. Anything else you want to add on Drinkwitz's comments?
I mean, no, again, I just, a ton of good stuff that we could probably unpack for a really long time. You talked about keeping in-state guys in state. I don't have it pulled up at the moment, but, and I wrote about it a little bit on Tuesday, where there's, you know, there's been a good chunk of these top end guys in the state of Missouri who have not gone to Missouri or haven't stayed at Missouri very long. In the case of Williams Maneri, you know, off the top of my head, Jeremiah McClellan, Oregon, Andrew Sprague at Michigan, and obviously Ryan Wingo at Texas are some of, you know, the bigger names. And that's not to say that these are like catastrophic misses, but in those situations, you're competing with Michigan, Oregon, and Texas. I know with McClellan, I mean, like Ohio State was in the running for him as well. So those are the big dogs in the money, in the scheme of the NIL money. Again, I don't know who's spending what, but if I had to throw a dart at a board, I would imagine that Oregon, Michigan, and Texas are up there. Same thing with Ohio State. So, and he was honest that, yeah, we could probably do a better job of recruiting these guys, but, you know, we have to put together a competitive package for them. And again, that's just some really fascinating transparency. I mean, Ryan Wingo is a one that we all kind of look back to. And again, it's all rumor based, but seems like there was probably a lot of money flying around from both sides in the case of Ryan Wingo when he eventually chooses Texas. I don't know how much of that was Drinkwitz getting out recruited and his staff getting out recruited versus not having the right NIL package for him. So just, I mean, really interesting stuff there. Obviously he mentions Matt Zollers and Donovan Lubide, which I feel like people probably, if I had to take a wild guess, took out of context. That's not saying that I think he was just using those guys as an example to the point where like teams are going to want them and they're going to have to do that. They're going to have to do what they can to retain them. Not saying that was not Drinkwitz saying that they're gone or teams are giving offers, which I guess is probably possible, but he was just using that situation as an example, which is honestly very, very valid. It makes a lot of sense that, and something we've talked about a lot over the last year or so, where obviously bringing new guys to fill holes is important. But when you have players who have showed promise, like Lubide, like Matt Zollers, I mean, you could, the list could go on and on and on. I mean, tell me there's not a team in the country that doesn't want Ahmad Hardy, you know? So player retention becomes a lot more important. And the money you give those guys or whatever that looks like becomes arguably more important than bringing in new talent. And then, I mean, as of Wednesday, Eli Drinkwitz has 22 guys in his 2026 recruiting class. It's a lot more than I thought it was going to be. I think it's probably more than we all thought it was going to be. That number can also still rise. That's a lot of dudes. So again, you're balancing paying 22 kids along with the transfers and the you know, guys who you want to keep around that are probably going to get offers from other schools. I mean, again, maybe like an Alubide, like a Matt Zollers, don't know what that looks like, but just again using that as an example. So just really, really interesting conversation in terms of how you distribute the money a little bit and how, you know, who gets what, and then having enough to do so. So again, I mean I thoroughly enjoyed Eli Drinkwitz's transparency this week, because really sparked some interesting conversation and he said a lot of good things.
Right. I thought it was particularly interesting as far as the in-state guys, because we've heard from him a few times over the years and kind of the popular narrative has been, Missouri has become a lot better at recruiting the state. And it's become apparent over these past two classes, like, okay, and especially once Winery left, it's like, all right, like, you know, that in 2025 they got the best player in the state in Jack Lane. That's great. And I think, you know, they've definitely made a lot of strides there. But as Drinkwitz pointed out clearly also, like, there's still a large chunk of the best players in the state who are not committing to Missouri. Like, you look at this 2025 class for Missouri. They got number one in Jack Lane. They get number two in Dayton Hopkins. They get Jason Keen at number nine. So that's three of the top 10. You got Nebraska, USC, Washington State, Kentucky, Iowa State, Indiana, all getting guys from there. You compare that to other states in the country. I mean, looking at Texas, three of these guys go to Texas. One goes to SMU, another to A&M. Actually, four in the top 10 go to Texas. There's only two or three schools in the top 10 of these guys that don't go to schools in Texas. And I mean, that's another benefit that Missouri has, the fact that they aren't competing with, I mean, especially for St. Louis guys. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, you're close to Indiana, you're close to Ohio State, but there's, you know, if you're from St. Louis, like Urbana-Champaign for University of Illinois is not nearly as close as Missouri, and especially for Missouri's laws. Like, you know, they don't have this amount of competition like there is in Texas or Florida. You look at Alabama, the state of Alabama for class 2025. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys that committed to Auburn. Interestingly enough, none to Alabama. In fact, that doesn't happen until 18th in the class. You look at Georgia, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 go to Georgia. 1 goes to Clemson, 2 to Georgia Tech. Like, they are still not where they want to be as far as recruiting Missouri. If they can do that, and like, that can change a lot. Like, there is enough good players in Missouri, and especially out of St. Louis and the Illinois area, to be able to do that. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, especially in 2026, really good crop of guys. I mean, obviously Jackson Cantwell is a huge miss. Titan Davis is a top 150 kid. I'm not going to lie, I know 24/7 just updated their rankings on Wednesday, so I really don't know who Demetrius Thompson is, but he rose and he's committed to Boston College, so I guess that's a guy. Jacob Eberhardt was someone they were involved with. Ronell Johnson was someone they're involved with. Bennett Frazier was someone they were involved with. I mean, again, long list of dudes. Those are some talented kids, especially Dazeefan Walker as well. I mean, those are all really good players. I mean, especially Cantwell and Titan Davis, and especially Cantwell. I know, I mean, it kind of fits into the example of what I was talking about with Ryan Wingo. It's like, I mean, I don't doubt that Eli Drinkwitz and his staff are good enough recruiters to land Jackson Cantwell. I do doubt that the pack NIL package might not have been there. And again, you know, kind of like Eli Drinkwitz said, it's not like a slight to anybody. It's not saying that someone's not doing their job enough or assigning blame. It's just kind of the truth. Miami's been around for a while and is a powerhouse, and they've always kind of drawn in this top level talent. So it's not like Miami doesn't deserve the 7th best player in the country, but it just kind of goes back to the point where, I mean, how good you can recruit someone does still matter. But like, and I'm not saying, I don't want to get my words twisted saying that all Jackson Cantwell cares about is money, because I've talked to the kid multiple times and I don't get that impression from him at all. So I'll backtrack a little bit, but that thought still has to be out there that maybe what Miami has to offer is a little bit better. So, again, a lot of talented kids and in the state of Missouri, and Missouri lands 2 in the top 10 in 2026. So something to keep an eye on. And I think, at least from my perspective, since kind of covering this local recruiting scene over the last two or three years, it seems like the crop of kids is getting better and better, and that you're seeing more teams from around the country dip into that pool. I feel like it's not often a kid from Nixon, Missouri ends up in Miami. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Right. And I mean, I think, you know, it's important to mention that there are other factors that are going to go into this for kids like Luther Burden, who want to stay at home, and that's their thing. They want to be a hometown hero. There's going to be guys that really want to get out of Nixon, Missouri or wherever. So like, there's going to be other factors into it. Like you said, Michael, like, to recruiting, pure recruiting, still, at least you would like to hope, for the sake of the sport we love, that recruiting outside of the actual money part of it still matters to an extent. Also, yeah, it's going to move the needle. And especially when I'd be interested, one of the things I've been so interested in with NIL is just how do you, when you're building a recruiting class across a year, obviously, but it's really more like 3 or 4 years that you're kind of, you have your guys in mind. I'd imagine that'd be the timeline. When you're doing that, you're trying to recruit guys out of high school, but you also don't know what your budget is going to look like come December of this year, how many guys are going to lose to the portal, how much they have to spend in the portal. It's got to be really challenging when according to Eli Drinkwitz, you're at a school where you're not one of the top spenders and all that. So again, very interesting conversation. And I think what I'm interested to see it, I mean, albeit, you know, assuming Eli Drinkwood stays here next year, just what this team looks like. Because a lot of the conversation after the Texas A&M loss, and Eli Drinkwitz, who is always aware of the narratives about him on Twitter, mentioned it too, of the fact that they can't win a big game, and the fact, you know, a popular narrative being, all right, like, you know, what's next after this? Like, has this program kind of hit a wall? And I don't know, but also it's feasible if he's if they're talking about being probably in the middle to the bottom half of the SEC as far as spending, to just kind of plateau, and, you know, this is where they're at. So excited to see how this all develops over the next forever. All right, let's talk about Oklahoma here in this game. First off, as far as Missouri's end goes, Eli Drinkwitz is anticipating that Matt Sellers will be the starter. Bo Prabila, though, seems like, I was going to say he's on a faster recovery track than initially anticipated, but there was a chance, we knew that he'd be, you know, he'd have a shot to return for the regular season, and this would be the game. Honestly, I don't know if, you know, especially if they lose this game, if they're going to throw him out there for Arkansas and same for the bowl game. Yeah, he was listed on the injury report as doubtful last week, all the way up to the game. He was warming up individually, not in the warm-ups right before the game, but about 2 hours before the game, he was throwing footballs. And he was, again, I was in the press box, so I couldn't see it perfectly. I didn't see any sort of support on his ankle. And also, like, he was doing all the same things that Matt Sellers was doing as far as like ankle movement. He was moving around, throwing on the run. So I think that's a really encouraging sign as far as his status. We'll see with this week. But again, Eli Drinkwood still anticipates that Matt Sellers will be the starter, and that Bo Prabila will be unable to play. He said, though, that if Bo is available, that Bo will be the starter. So, I think we've learned over the last 2 weeks that would make a difference, no matter how much, what your evaluation of Bo Prabila has been. As I said right before Matt Sellers started against Texas A&M, there are going to be moments when you are reminded he is a true freshman starting at quarterback, especially when he was going against one of the best defenses in the country. We'll get into this Oklahoma team. Any thoughts on Bo's status and I guess just reflection on how Matt has performed, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want this to sound like a comment on who's going to be on the team next year when I say this, but like Bo Prabila should not play. And I don't know if that's I don't want to give out a hot take, but I don't think he should play for the sake of his health. And like his future football career. I mean, clearly this injury was not of the severity that we thought it was. It probably could have been a lot worse, but I would imagine it's a thing. I'm not an ankle expert, but I've rolled my ankle before, and I rolled it once for the first time in high school, and I roll it a lot more now. I don't know if it's the same thing, but you know, you don't want him to mess that up again. And I would imagine the chance of re-injury if he's not at 100% has got to be high. Again, not a doctor, but he probably shouldn't play. It would not be worth, you know, that getting, you know, worse at the end of the season. I guess he would have an offseason to prepare, but there's setbacks. That's a setback in terms of getting ready for next season. And if he has a whole healthy offseason, that's a whole lot better than having a half, you know, only half of an offseason to prepare. So kind of common sense, but and I understand why they want to roll him out, especially for this game, because Oklahoma's defense is pretty darn good. And we saw what happened to Matt Zollers against a really good defense. So I understand the concern there, but I just, and I mean, also with the stakes of the season, I'm not saying there's not something to play for. If Missouri had found a way to beat Texas A&M and you're looking at it's a two loss team and this is the game, then why not? I mean, give it a shot, I guess, if he really, if they think it's possible. But just with the stakes of the season, I just don't think it's worth it. And with Matt, I think he's showing improvement game to game. I think the bad decisions are slowly getting lower and lower. The interception he threw was just a little behind him. Right idea. But just a little bit of a misfire. He made some really good passes. The one to Donovan was obviously impressive. I think he worked the middle of the field a little bit more, which is something I begged and pleaded for last week. So that was good. And I think those throws were pretty accurate. He had one to Kevin that was just kind of a sit in the zone curl route that was pretty tightly contested, and he hit that on the money. That's kind of that's a throw in my eyes that shows development, and just one of those, it was probably 7 yards, but just really, you know, short and efficient, kind of a snappy throw, and it was, you know, well placed. The throw to Josh as well, just kind of sitting down the defense and let Josh Manning do his thing. I think that was another good throw as well. So he's showing signs of maturity. The intentional grounding calls are what they are. I feel like maybe the second one you can make an argument that wasn't the best call in the universe, but you've got to be aware of those things. I mean, again, offensive line looked good, but still wasn't perfect. He was still getting pressured a little bit. They still played really, really well, but I mean, yeah, he's showing, he still looks like a freshman, kind of like you said, Joey, but he is showing game to game improvements. I'm sure that hitting that deep ball to Donovan for a touchdown was probably a confidence builder of sorts, and I think that stuff for a true freshman really, really makes the difference. So, I mean, I think he looked better. It's nowhere near perfect. Don't expect it to be perfect. But the fact that we're seeing some growth in game-to-game improvements is a really positive thing.
Absolutely. All right. This Oklahoma game is interesting just as far as where it falls on the spectrum of kind of what you were talking about, Michael, of this team, at least from talking to them, it does matter to them. Obviously, I mean, They've said all along they still got things to play for this season. Like, you're, as a competitor, you're not going to just be like, oh, well. And also, I, as has been talked about ad nauseum at this point, be pretty dang cool for Missouri to go into Oklahoma and beat them at Norman for the first time in 59 years since 1966. 10-7 barn burner in Norman that year. So, like, that's a long time. They are 8-33-5 on the road against this team. So, lot, you know, again, this would be a big upset, but if they're able to do it, be a big deal. Probably into the teens of the college football playoff poll. Although, that's a mess right now. But, you know, Eli Drinkwitz talked about at the end of last year how it matters that they were ranked in the top 5 AP poll for 2 straight seasons at the end of it. I think this is a pretty good way to secure that. That I don't know if they lose this game that would be in the cards. So that'd be big. As far as this Oklahoma team goes, coming off an upset over Alabama, obviously, John Mateer, at least stat sheet wise, has not been the Heisman contender he was, you know, he was expected to be. Obviously, there's context to that. He's had that injury he had earlier in the year. There's been injuries to the offensive line. So the offense hasn't been completely in sync and connected. You know, he has 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions there. But obviously, still a really talented player. They've built this offense around him with his old offense coordinator. I think a lot of Missouri fans became familiar with John Mateer about a week before Missouri ultimately got Bo Pribula in the transfer portal. So know the dangerous and unique playing style he has. Oklahoma's other big transfer addition, Jaden Ott, hasn't been really involved all that much this year. It's really been Torrey Balock, the true freshman four-star guy. He's a former track guy, so a bit of speedster. Defense is the real star of this team. Second in the SEC in yards per game allowed, first in points per game. If we're talking about guys from the state of Missouri that Missouri was unable to land, you obviously have David Stone. Or no, he's from Oklahoma. Is there one from Missouri on their defensive line? Or I think I'm just making that up because of the constant rumors about David Stone transferring to Missouri in the offseason that Missouri's burners like to perpetuate.
I think you're right there.
Okay. All that to say, second in the SEC in yards per game allowed, first in points per game allowed at 14.8. Just a really great front seven. They obviously have R. Mason Thomas as an edge rusher in that group too. So, again, as far as game, that it'd be great to have Bo Pribula back for. At least, as you know, I don't disagree with what you said, Michael. It's hard to say without knowing his exact situation and all of that and his medical reports. But as far as matchup wise, it'd be pretty dang helpful to have Bo Pribula back for this game. Just what are your thoughts on Bo or Oklahoma rather?
Yeah, I mean, I think I really agree with what you said. Their defense is so good, and just another. I mean, to put it in context, for Matt Zollers to have to go in his first three starts of his college football career to go against this, you know, that Texas A&M defense and then this Oklahoma defense is just like unfortunate. You know, I think it's a little bit of a different situation. I think A&M brings is a really good pressure team to just force Zollers into bad situations. This Oklahoma secondary is just like so good. I don't really know how else to put it. They're very deep. You know, with Peyton Bowen, Spears Jennings, Gentry, Eli Bowen, Boganowski. That's a mixture of corners and safeties. I know Eli Bowen had a pick six last week. They have Corton Gilroy. He's a true freshman. He's been one of the best true freshmen in the country this year. So not really any weaknesses in that department. And then you go down the line. I mean, R. Mason Thomas is one of the best pass rushers in the country. I don't know if we really know his injury status. We might have a general idea in like an hour.
I was trying to find that earlier. I think I would lean to he'd be active.
Yeah, that would probably be my impression too, but it's 6 o'clock on Wednesday while we're talking right now. So we'll have a more of an idea in an hour. But if he is available, which let's go under the assumption he is, Matt Zollers probably wishes he wasn't because he's can be a game wrecker. Marvin Jones Jr. on the other side has bounced around teams in his first couple years. I don't know if Marvin Jones Jr. is healthy as well, but he is a heck of a football player. Taylor Ween, I believe that's how you say that, has stepped up. He's been really good. He was incredible against Alabama last week. Their interior is also just so good. Demonic Williams is a transfer from, I want to say, TCU. And that was a guy that Mizzou went after in the spring part of the transfer portal last year when they were looking for more depth on the interior of the defensive line. They end up with Braylon Henderson. So something to consider there.
Is his name really pronounced? Is it demonic? Or it looks like... Dominic. That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, I guess it could be Dominic.
I'm gonna lean toward Dominic, but I kind of hope it's demonic.
Yeah, I guess that really sounds a lot. I don't know if it sounds better or worse. You're right.
No insult to his character, but I feel like as a defensive tackle, you'd really embrace that.
Yeah.
They don't have a pronunciation listed on the website, at least from what I can find, unfortunately.
Well, let's go with Dominic because that rolls off the tongue a little easier. But he's a heck of a player. Jaden Jackson was one of the better true freshmen of the country last year. And then obviously everybody in the state of Missouri and city of Columbia knows who David Stone is. Like you said, David Stone's been really good over the last couple of weeks. So, and then you step back and the linebackers are incredible with Kip Lewis, Kobe McKenzie as well. They have a couple really good outside linebackers who are still kind of raw players. Oh boy. Adepoju Adebawore, I know, was a really good recruit and heck of an athlete. Not hasn't necessarily put it together yet, but that's a guy who can kind of come in and wreck a game as well. So the list on the offensive side of the ball just kind of goes on and on and on. Yeah, a lot of really good football players. Another situation where everyone's going to really have to chip in to make sure Matt Zollers is, if again, assuming he is the starter. I mean, same thing goes for Bo Pribula because, you know, again, back to what we're saying, re-injury as a possibility. You're not going to want that to happen. So regardless of who's at quarterback for Missouri, it's going to have to be a group effort. Yeah, then over on the offense, Torrey Blaylock, Jaden Ott. I know Jovante Barnes and Xavier Robinson has chipped in. Xavier Robinson had a 100-yard rushing game a couple weeks ago. So I don't exactly know what their rotation looks like. It might just kind of depend on the day. But I know Robinson is a guy who's capable of, you know, being productive. Same thing with Jovante Barnes or Jaden Ott. Jaden Ott's situation is odd. We were talking about it before we started recording, and I don't think either of us have a full grasp on the situation. I don't know if anyone surrounding Oklahoma or their media have a full grasp on the situation. So kind of odd there. Good receiving core. Joey, you might have to help me out with the name here. Is it Isaiah Satenya?
Satenya is what we settled on, yeah.
Satenya, he transferred from Arkansas, so he has been a heck of a player, and Missouri is comfortable, or not comfortable, but they're going to know what to expect from him. Like, Toriano Pride actually said some quality stuff that really what they focused in on was his speed and kind of shiftiness last year. So they're going to have a little bit of a scouting report, and they're going to have some game feel for how to go against him. So I guess that could help. Deion Burks, Keontez Lewis, Javonte Gibson have kind of been the next receivers to step up in that department. Deion Burks was hurt last year, I believe, when Oklahoma came to Columbia, and that was kind of a guy that they were looking to fall back on. So he'll be available, I believe. Their tight end is Jaron Kanak. Fun fact, was a defensive end, I believe. Switched positions this year. And has been really good, 433 yards on 32 receptions, their third leading receiver. So, and the offensive line is solid as well. Michael Fasusi, true freshman at the left tackle spot, a couple other guys there that have been really solid. So I think Brent Venables and his coaching staff did a really, really good job of going out and hunting their needs in the transfer portal and in their 25 recruiting class. But in the transfer portal, they added like four wide receivers in the transfer portal. So they did not shy away from knowing what they needed. They were thin at the position last year. And then their defense has really just developed nicely together and not a lot of returning production. Then you got add guys in like Kendall Daniels, like Jones, like Corton Gilroy, and others. And it's just kind of a really good blend. And Brett Venables, I think there was some concern for him and him maybe being, you know, on the hot seat at one point in the season. And that narrative has just completely shifted. For those who watched Oklahoma's game against Alabama, I mean, that looked like one of the, I mean, they both were obviously very good, but Oklahoma looked like one of the best teams in the country. So they're playing at a very high level. And again, it's going to have to be a group effort and then some you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball for Missouri to make whoever's at the quarterback spot comfortable and to just really be able to move the ball in general, because this defense could do that to you. I mean, again, with the secondary, there were throws where Ty Simpson was making passes on the money, but these corners are just lockdowns and they have good hands and they don't commit penalties and they're able to just kind of bat the ball away or generate turnovers. So, yeah, it's going to be one heck of a challenge for Missouri's offense. The game plan is going to be interesting. I don't know how you approach it, but it's got to be a good one to beat this defense.
Absolutely. All right. We will be there in Norman this upcoming week, and then I'll be in Fayetteville to close out the season. And then I'm sure no matter what happens, that first, as soon as I get back from Fayetteville on that Sunday, I will be pretty locked into my computer, as will you, Michael, for the week after that. So excited to see how this all plays out. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Hope we do the same for the rest of our coverage over at Missouri Tigers on SI.